beacon shining in the night, sometimes obscured by a shadow, reinforced by a wall of ice, always protected by a podcast overlord.
Their mission, to help the Green Arrow fight the darkness, corruption, and bring hope.
We are strong.
We are many.
We are the Arrow Squad.
Hello, Arrow Squad. This is The Flash.
And this is The Chameleon.
How you doing, Cammy?
I'm good. I'm really excited to discuss this week. We've got female villains. It's my favorite thing, Flash.
Yes, we all know that. I was quite excited to see them all come back, too, because it was like, well, two of them, two out of three, but we'll get to that. But yeah, something that we didn't do last week. We want to welcome everybody to Season 5, Episode 14, The Sin Eater.
The Sin Eater. That's such a cool title.
It is a very cool title.
Well, do we have any news items before we get into it?
Yeah, we do, actually. There's something I had meant to bring up last week, because there's been a lot of questions. People have been wondering, where is Thea? Why is Thea not part of this season very much? And
I've been wondering that.
You've been wondering that. Well, there was a few people on the Facebook page, I think, at least complaining that they want more of Willa Holland. But the reason being is that Willa has only been contracted for 14 episodes out of the 23. Yeah. So that's why we're not seeing her as much.
Yeah, which is disappointing because I've loved Thea recently, but at least it makes it all sort of make a little more sense as to why she's been off in the political world somewhere.
That is true. And I mean, they wrote it for her to be away and it made sense. It just made us very sad that she's not with us. Yeah. Anything else that we got there?
Well, this is maybe kind of close to being a spoiler. It's not really a spoiler, but we also had some questions about Lila, if Lila was coming back, if Lila has disappeared forever, since we knew that the actress who plays her was filming some stuff for another TV show. But we found out that she is back and filming with Arrow this week. So she will be in some of the final episodes this season, at least.
Cool. That's good. I mean, I think they kind of have to bring her back. You can't just let her disappear. If they're going to write her out, they have to write her out, or we're seriously missing. There's some big, big plot holes there.
Yeah, I'm excited for her to come back because it means we might get some more, you know, Diggle storyline, and I think we could use a little more.
Well, it does. It needs to be finished because, the last we saw was she was in hiding with their kid, and that's the last we saw, so there's got to be a finish to that story. There has to be an ending. Close the loop,
as they say. From Sarah to baby JJ, and, you know, they never really unpacked that very much, so I don't know. There's a few questions there I'd like answered.
Very true. Well, let's dive into this episode.
Do you want to start first with your ratings? I want to know what you rated it.
Well, I'm gonna keep you waiting with bated breath, because we got a little pre-show feedback. Which, as we got something in from Aaron after our podcast release last week, so it's in regard to last week, and she just had a couple thoughts, and I wanted to go through them because she's agreeing with good old Flash here quite a bit. So she was just saying that the scene of Oliver talking down the bad guy in the hospital as the mayor instead of Green Arrow was definitely her favorite scene in the episode. Curtis also had a great point about the discussions on the guns and stuff. She feels it would have to be a case of Renee had Zoe when he was a teen, because if you assume he's 30 at most, then it works if he had her around 15. So by the time he's 30, she's 15, which appears to be the case in the flashbacks. She also said that, or she's a really tall 8-year-old, which could still make him having her as young. And she definitely hopes Diggle stays with Lila. Then her last little bit was that she did agree with me about Trisha Helfer and our Dinah Lance Dinah Drake kind of looking very much like sisters.
I saw somebody mention in the Arrow Squad Facebook as well. They posted a side-by-side comparison of Trisha and the actress who plays Dinah now the current Dinah.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty uncanny resemblance. You're right about that.
That was our friend Jeff Gentry that did that. So I'm glad that you're noticing it. That's kind of cool.
Maybe we could bring Trisha in to play like her sister or her aunt or her girlfriend or whatever. Ooh. Some episode, some season.
Yeah, because I don't think Trisha's doing anything right now, is she?
I don't know. That's a good question. Last I saw her was on Suits.
True. All right. But anyway, thanks, Aaron, for just getting that in. It's nice that you're feeling the same as us. So you want to know what I felt about this episode. You sure you don't want to go first?
I'm sure, because I have nailed down my rating, but it's one of those weeks where I'm a little torn about my rating. I kind of wish I could give it two, so I'm curious what you had to think. So I think you should start us off, so you can start us off on like an optimistic note.
All right. Well, I like that you use that word, because I think I have some optimism that I want to pass on to the Arrow Squad. So okay. I rated this 8 sparkly spinning arrow escapes. Because that was pretty cool. I'll bring that up again later, but I love that little escape. So what I want to say, this episode may not have been an explosive oh my god episode of Arrow, especially coming after last week's high tension with all the reactions to the political, you know, gun stuff.
Right.
I think the expectations we're kind of all over the map for this one. People, I think, were really hoping for a good episode, and some people were thinking, Arrow's fallen off the rails again because of that of last week. But right. Let me put it this way. I liked this episode, and I liked it a lot. Even though an 8 isn't the highest rating, it's still up there. Even on 2 watch-throughs, I found that this episode is really quite a complete episode. It had a little of everything. It had some storylines with Oliver being the mayor. It had a lot of team action in the streets. It had some scenes in the Arrow Cave. There was a lot of drama between the characters, and there was some humor in it. It was well put together. Nothing seemed herky-jerky. Nothing seemed all out of joint. It just flowed from beginning to end, very well put together and complete. Now, bringing it back to the start, when I said not an Oh My God episode, I want to defend it. I want to defend Arrow here, because we can't expect every single week of a 23-episode season to be explosive and jaw-dropping and full of water cooler talking moments. You just can't expect that. And for the record, I hate the term filler episode, because that's not what this was. That bugs me, filler episode. If they're actually going to spend millions of dollars on an episode, they are going to make sure there's at least something in it. If they're not going to spend that kind of money making a filler episode, that's just a ridiculous term to me. Anyway, this wasn't that. 23 episodes is a long season. And what I like about having that many episodes, it gives stories a chance to flesh out. And some of those stories take time. Even in the comic books, not every single issue was newsworthy or explosive, you must buy this issue kind of thing. You'd actually only get those big stories in a lot of the commemorative issues, like issue number 50 or issue number 100, they would save their big, big story events for. And you'd have to read through a lot of weekly or monthly comics that just continue the storyline. And that's what this TV episode was to me. We're living through the Arrow world as things happen, and we can't expect big moments every show. I think we'd get desensitized to it. And then the show would have to continue to try to top themselves week after week. So that's how I feel about this episode. It was very enjoyable. It was very complete. And it just flowed. It just continued our story. And I think more so now than ever with this season, Arrow has just become sort of a living, breathing world. And I think that's what you get after 5 seasons. So there you go.
That's such a good analysis. It's such a positive analysis of this episode. I enjoyed that. My rating is a little lower, but it's higher than last week.
Okay.
I rated it a 6.5.
Like I say, that's high, but you're right. You're 0.5 higher than last week.
Yeah, it is. And that's only a point and a half away from 8. The reason why it's a 6.5 is because I had a mix of some moments I loved from this episode and like one main moment or one main, I guess, storyline that I really had some issues with. And then everything else was like exactly as you were saying. It just flowed. And again, I definitely would not call this a filler episode. I was so excited for this episode because we have not one but three villainesses. And, you know, I love that. And I thought that was pretty cool. And it's, you know, it's a fun way to incorporate, you know, some flashy things like the spinny arrow that you mentioned. I don't know. It was cool, and I liked that quite a bit.
I'm betting you wish you could join them and make it a what would you call it, a quartet?
Yes, a four-person squad, a four-woman squad. I don't know. They should adopt me or marry me, whichever one they prefer. I'll take it. Yeah, that's what brought it down, is they didn't let me join their girl gang. No, I'm kidding.
I see.
I loved the trio. It just felt a bit in and out and rushed. They all have kind of distinct personalities. The three of them all have sort of distinct fighting styles. And while we got to see a little bit of that for a short amount of time, I was left kind of wishing maybe they had like a two or three episode arc with them, or even that they were maybe a like consistently existing anti-hero girl gang that could kind of join the team for certain episodes and then not be around for some episodes. I don't know. It felt, you know, to pack all three of them in a 40-minute episode felt a little rushed. So that was a bit, but the scenes with Felicity and Thea were fantastic. I thought that it was really cool getting to see some of the action sequences this week, which I'm not always, you know, like gung-ho for the action bits, but I loved them. And it was, you know, there were some, you mentioned big moments versus lack of big moments. There was a bit of a big moment there at the end of the episode where we find out, you know, Oliver's identity is getting out, you know, for the millionth time, but that is a big moment sort of each time, and he may be impeached, which is a big part of his, you know, 5-year arc was getting there. So that I think is the storyline that I started to pick issues. It's starting to fall apart a little bit for me. So that's what brought it down. Otherwise this episode probably would have scored really high for me. But again, it's still higher than average, higher than last week. It's not bad.
Well, you mentioned quite a few little points that I think we'll flesh out a little more in depth once we get through our notes here. So
yeah,
definitely. Well, let's counter that then. You must have had a favorite moment out of this scene, since we like to pick out our favorite moments.
So I thought my favorite moment would be, you know, the three lady villains returning and teaming up. But what actually ended up being my favorite moment from this episode were our two lady heroes teaming up. We got to see Thea and Felicity work together, which is actually something we haven't seen in a super long time, if you think about it.
Yeah.
And I love the context in which they teamed up, where it was kind of a tough gray area choice, which I think is where the show Arrow really thrives, is in not keeping everything so black and white. It's you sort of have to make the very tough, real human choices in this type of show. You can't just, you know, laser blast a meta monster away. These are much more real and gritty moments, and it was cool to see them have to tackle that together and to see the fallout of that actually get fleshed out. And it definitely left lots to discuss. The scenes were engaging while they were working together. They were, you know, kind of engaging / heart-wrenching when they were dealing with the fallout of that. And I definitely saw, you know, in all the reviews and on all the social media platforms, that was what people were discussing, was, you know, the ethics and validity of that storyline. So that was definitely a highlight for me. What about you?
Well, and just going along with that, I think it was just the fact of having two of our original characters that we've had for so long back in a scene together. I mean, having Thea back in the Arrow Cave, and because we haven't seen her in a scene with Felicity for a while. So just seeing them walk in and Felicity being so happy to see her, and they, you know, they have a nice hug, and and then Thea presents the problem and Felicity immediately goes, "Oh my God, yeah, we have to fix this. And what's going on?" Like, there was so much chemistry just between the two of them. You could see there's a lot of history between these two, and you felt it. Even though the scenes were very short, you felt that. And I think that's what gave us all that, this feels good kind of feeling.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It feels almost rare these days that any of our original characters interact with each other, because we do have so many new people, which is great. You know, it's fun and exciting to see some of the old characters interact with the new characters. But when we see two of our oldies back together again, you know, that's one of my favorite friendships, and it's definitely one of the most meaningful friendships, I think, on the show. So it was great to have them paired up, and they both come from such different moral perspectives. You know, like, we have seen Thea now, you know, be compared to the type of choices Moira had to make, whereas Felicity does tend to be, you know, we've referred to her in the past as the hero whisperer. Not that she's always has the, you know, everything has to be perfect and you can't kill anybody type of thing, but she does have a very, I guess, reliable moral compass. So having the two of them work together was really interesting, and it was a good, I think it made for a really interesting story arc with lots to discuss.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It's really nice, for sure. Well,
what about you?
I'm kind of chuckling at myself because we all know how the Overlord just crushes on Sarah Lance. I think I may be developing a similar type of crush on our new Dinah. Because even though her scenes were not very big in this episode, I absolutely loved every single scene that she was in. Mm-hmm. I think she is fitting in so well with this cast as an actress, as well as her character fitting in with the show's characters.
And she's kind of pretty, too.
Yeah, she's definitely a nice-looking woman, for sure. But I just felt each scene was very significant. I mean, you had the one with Diggle. It was very quick, but she was unsure about getting sworn in with the police again, and he was totally there for her, supporting her going back to the police. And that was just a great little moment. And then you've got the scene when Oliver is officially swearing her in. It's just, I mean, we know Oliver knows who she is. She knows who he is. Lance is standing there. He knows. And Thea's in the background. I mean, just the four of them all knowing that they're a team behind the scenes, and here they are in public being a whole different type of team. It was just a very cool moment, I thought, that they're officially swearing her in to be completely part of the team. I really like that. And then, of course, one of the best moments was the scene with her and Felicity, when Felicity presents her with the little box, and she looks over at the costume, and she goes, I don't know if I'm ready to fill Laurel's shoes. And Felicity's like, it's not shoes, it's a mask. I mean, she was just so irresistibly cute. I wanted to just pinch Felicity's cheeks there. She was so cute. I mean, it was such a great scene. Felicity's just totally welcoming her in and trying to make her feel part of this team. And I loved it. And then
it was such a valid point, too, that, you know, it doesn't have to be an all or nothing replication. It doesn't have to be that Dinah's going to wear an identical costume as somebody else and, you know, fill her shoes and do the exact same thing. It's just sort of that, you know, you need a mask and you need a code name and, you know, you need to be out in the field doing hand-to-hand combat. And, you know, that's where the story was going. And I think it was cool to have that it was a lighthearted sort of quote-unquote hero whispery moment. You know, it wasn't like a serious heart-to-heart talk so much as it was like, you know, this is what we're going to do. We're going to make the best of it. And it was really cute.
Yeah. Well, and Felicity was even, I mean, her idea was smart, too. It wasn't like it was coming out of left field. I mean, if Dinah's going to be on the police force, she can't be running around the streets with the Arrow team without some type of, cover, because the police that often are at the same scenes would recognize her. So it just, yeah, it was simple wisdom, but it made sense. And it's kind of like a, Homer Simpson, dope kind of moment. Yeah, I better cover my face up.
You learn that when you work on Team Arrow for, 5 years now, I guess.
Yeah. But then the final scene that I loved was when Dinah went into the, it was either the office or the police station. I couldn't recognize the rooms, but when she talked to Lance and Lance was giving his approval of her being Black Canary. That was a powerful scene because she was really worried about how he might feel about it and, you know, that she's replacing Laurel. And he's like, well, that's not what Laurel said. You know, you're not, I have the quote here somewhere. I was going to talk about this later. But he says, Laurel wanted someone to carry on in her place, not replace her.
Right.
And I just thought that was a very touching and powerful moment. And again, I love Dinah as she's fitting in everywhere on this show and with this team. It's fantastic.
Yeah. I'm, you know, I had my concerns with her coming in because she is a meta, but honestly, again, like I said before, she's my favorite canary so far, even though we've only had a few episodes with her. And, you know, there's nothing really other than, you know, it's very late in the game to introduce a new character. There's nothing really I have a problem with other than that. And, you know, the meta bit, but that's neither here nor there. Arrow is a show that has metas now, so.
Yeah. Well, and we know we have a sixth season, so, you know, is it really late in the game? You know, hopefully she'll be around.
That's true. That's true. Assuming there's no, like, major time jumps or cast changes going into season six, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
It's not too late.
We'll see. All right. Well, let's get into some story points. We've got a few and quite a bit to talk about because this was overall a fun episode. What do you want to start with?
Well, let's start with our villains of the week. Let's talk about our girl gang.
Villainesses. Is that what you would call them? Villainesses?
Villainesses. That's plural for villainous, right? Villaini. Villainessi. Yeah. You know what? They were lady villains, and there were three of them. Right. It was great. What did you think of their team up?
Well, how about you go first on this, and I'll try to fill in, because you were kind of more excited about these three, so let's hear it, because I think you were a little bit disappointed, like you said in the beginning, so you start off, and I'll kind of fill in my thoughts.
I think about maybe somewhere around two-thirds of the way through the episode is when I started to get a little disappointed with what they were doing with this team, because, you know, as we've sort of talked about before in the context of Team Arrow, it does take a bit to sort of establish a new team. Mm-hmm. We have our newbies on Team Arrow, and we're sort of just now starting to warm up to them and figure out their place in this world of Arrow. And so with this new team, I thought they have, you know, they have this potential to gel well together and work well together. You know, I'm a bit biased because I liked them to start with. So for me, I was like, they gelled faster than the newbies gelled. Like, I'm here for it. But it was really disappointing to know that was only here for one episode. I know we've seen them all before and they've all had their storylines before. So, you know, it wasn't just for one episode. They've existed before and they may return again, but I don't know. This was something that had the potential, I think, to be like an ongoing, whether it be a couple episode arc where they're sort of the villains, or a thing where they're sort of forced to work with Team Arrow for a while, or I don't know. It would have been more interesting to me because it seems like they were just like broken out, dropped into Star City, trying to run their thing. They get stopped. The end. Like, that was our villain of the week. And I was just like kind of left wishing there was more. And we say pretty often, you know, if you wish for more, that means it was good. You wanted more of it. I don't know. Underutilized, I guess I would say. What about you?
Yeah, see, that's where I'll agree with you. Underutilized. There was a few things with them I think I'd like to point out. I mean, right in the beginning, that opening scene on the bus, I thought was a little bit underprotected for transporting three fairly high-level villains. Don't you think? So I thought that was a little bit odd, but there was a moment on the bus there when they were Cupid had asked, where are we going next? And is Cupid, China White, and I keep forgetting the other girl's name.
Cupid, China White, and Liza Warner.
Warner, right. Warner says, we're headed back to Star City. I got some stuff to deal with. Did you notice the look on Cupid's face as soon as she said, head back to Star City? She just looked completely, oh, I don't want to go back there, kind of look on her face. So I wonder, you know, she just doesn't want to deal with, I guess, whatever's back there for her. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, I guess she's lost people and lost past crushes and past loves. And yeah, they're all sort of associated with Star City, I guess.
Or maybe she realizes, yeah, we'll probably get caught again. Why go back there? I don't know.
Also true. Very true.
But I'm kind of with you. They could be a cool trio if they brought them back a lot more. They just weren't used very effectively here. In fact, yeah. they kind of looked a little bit dopey to me, in all honesty. You know, like yeah. kind of like bumbling idiots. They just like I don't know what is with China. What she was the most unimpressive to me. Isn't she supposed to be something serious in the Arrow mythos?
Yeah, she is, and she's supposed to be such a formidable villain. You know, right. somebody who could, you know, go toe to toe with Green Arrow and at least put up a fight. And we had three formidable villains who all should be able to individually go toe to toe and put up a great fight. And I suppose in a sense, you know, there was a couple action sequences, but it wasn't what I feel like they deserved.
No, it's not what they're capable of at all.
Yeah. I think they really missed an opportunity to make each of these ladies really seem strong and tough and highlight their skills in their own right, which in turn would make Team Arrow also seem strong for being able to contain them or take them down or stop them in their, you know, vicious, villainy ways. So I think I would have preferred for them to be a little bit more anti-hero-ish and stronger.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, even when they faced down a couple of those regular street level thugs, Cupid got taken down twice. She couldn't even stand toe to toe with some regular thugs. So, yeah, they were very underwhelming. And I mean, even Warner, I couldn't even remember her name. She's very forgettable to me. I completely couldn't remember her from anywhere in previous seasons. I forgot her storyline. I forgot everything. So that just shows how memorable of a character she was. So
Yeah. And she's played by a wonderful actress. Rutina's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of potential for her character to be great, just as there's potential for all of these characters to be great. They just weren't written as great this week. There were still some cute aesthetics here and there, a couple fun lines, a couple cute action sequences. But it's sort of like, you know, if you're going to bring in these like great, fun anti-hero/villain characters, and you're going to bring in three of them, you know, work it for all it's worth. These are great actresses and fun names that the audience recognizes. I think they could have capitalized on that opportunity a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure. And let me ask you, like, right at the end of the big battle scene when the cops came in and stuff, they shot China. Is she done? Is that the end of her? Because she sure went down pretty fast.
Does anybody die on Arrow?
Well, yeah, okay, good question. But I'm just in that moment, was it just a immobilizer shot, or was she shot and taken out? Because
honestly, I don't know. I mean, that's not how I would ever want to see China taken out. It does not seem like that fits, again, her character and capabilities. But exactly. After watching an episode like this, it's certainly possible that that's what they intended.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I do have to say, though, that probably one of the neatest things, which goes back to my rating, was that moment when Oliver shows up on the scene. And then the cops show up and let the ladies get away, and they're holding Oliver at gunpoint, and he uses that sparkling spinny arrow thing. That was just cool. Like, I love that he's thinking ahead to always have some type of defense, some type of escape, some type of mechanism to help him in whatever situation he's in. It just shows how smart Oliver is in the streets. And then I love that they show his repertoire of arrows that he has. It's just fun.
Yeah, it was pretty fun this week. And I like, you know, I like the sort of fun, impressive, techie aspects, because I think that really fits the Arrow show fighting style. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's a nice balance between like grounded, gritty hand-to-hand combat and sort of this fantasy world of comics that we also want to create. And so I think the sort of fun arrows can be a nice way to do that. I will admit some you know, sort of trick arrows they've used before have been just a little too cheesy for me, like just a little too jokey. It's like, it's just comic book fan service, but like okay.
The boxing glove
but
arrow.
This, yeah, but I mean, that's fine. People love it. Yeah. But this week I thought it was cool and it was fun to watch.
Well, yeah, it's like the parachute arrow gave me that same type of, you know, nerdy excitement. Yeah, parachute arrow, that was cool. Mm-hmm. Same type of thing. So yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was cool this week.
Fun stuff.
We brought back a lot of villains. I just was curious if we could sort of bring back any villain. Who would you bring back?
How about Prometheus? Isn't he supposed to be our villain?
Oh yeah, that guy.
That guy. Yeah, I think he's still kicking around somewhere. I don't know. We hear his name often, but
yeah, but we don't know who he is or anything about him. We're not really sure why we're supposed to care about him.
No, you know, I saw your question and I was thinking about it, and I'm trying to remember the villains on Arrow. I mean, they've basically had one main season villain and then a whole bunch of side ones that would pop in here and there. And yeah. You know what? Just in the moment, I couldn't really think of a lot. Slade Wilson has always been my favorite, and he always will be my favorite villain.
Right.
I know there's a lot of stuff going on. I don't even know what the story is with Manu Bennett and why someone's not getting along. I don't know what's happening in the real world, but I met him. I think he's fantastic. I love the actor. I love him as a human being. And I would love to have him come back on the show because he was the best that we've ever had.
Slade was a good, formidable opponent for Oliver.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what he could do. I don't know what kind of story you could write for him to come back. I also don't like how they left it. I don't like how they left him in the prison back on the island. Yeah. And then the one time they went back to the prison, he was gone.
I'm guessing he'll escape in some way. I don't know if they will ever show Slade as played by Manu again, or if they'll, you know, how they for the dream sequence and the crossover, I believe they just, you know, had some sort of stand-in wearing that costume. Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. The last time we saw that prison on the island, the cell was empty and Oliver was asking where Slade, and nobody had an answer.
Right.
So he's out there. Right.
Right.
So, yeah.
I'm curious to see what they would do with that. The villain that I would bring back to return is probably Huntress.
Okay, yeah.
They've been name dropping the Bertinelli family this season as well.
They have.
I think they did that last week, right? And they may have done that one other time this season. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. I'm positive they did it last week.
She's kind of borderline though. She's not ultra true villain. She's wavering sometimes. So I would like to just see the character come back because she was fun. She was cool when she was here.
Yeah, I liked her a lot. So I initially was hoping, because of the Bertinelli name drop last week and all the villainesses returning this week, I was like, I wonder, are they going to do like a tiny Huntress mention, or will she show up for a second? But once, no offense to the writing team, but once I saw how the three that did exist were written, I was like, nope, we'll save Huntress for a week of her own. She needs a little bit more attention than what these were given.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, talked about what the Green Arrow had to fight in the field, but Oliver, the mayor, also had a bit of an opponent this week in the form of Susan, and he didn't take her down. Thea did. And then now everybody's kind of got an opinion on who was right and who was wrong. And I want to hear what you think on that.
this is a big question because I don't even know what I think yet. And I've watched the episode twice. I'm not sure. I don't know if she's behind the leak to the media. I'm not sure what I feel on that yet. My feeling is she's not. It's not her. I'm going to go with that it's probably Prometheus still trying to mess with him as much as he can. I felt from those scenes that she was genuinely hurt that he either didn't tell her the truth or that he was lying to her, whatever angle you want to look at it with. Because remember last week I touched on that I noticed her expression when she was laying on his chest, that I think she is truly caring for him. So I think she was genuinely hurt. by what was going on there. I don't think she's hurt enough to go do that to him. I don't know. And I could be completely wrong. She could be some serious incarnation of evil, and she's just going to go all out rage on him and try to drag his name through the mud for sure. But what I'm wondering is, did we finally see a hint that he knows she was digging into his life behind the scenes? Because, like, was he just testing her to see her reaction when she asked her the Green Arrow? And he's like, yep. Oh, I thought you were just kidding. Was he testing her? Was he seeing how she was going to react to try and gauge where the situation is? Because what I'm wondering with that is, does he have this long con type of plan to see where she's going with all this information? And did Thea ruin all of that?
I think that's one of the things we've brought up and sort of wondered every week. Does Oliver have a long con? And then it gets to be like a little bit more of a reach and we're like, but does he still have a long con? And I'm with you. I'm doing the same thing because frankly, that's the only thing that could sort of help with the sort of character assassination that they're putting him through with this, because, you know, I don't want to beat a dead horse because we've definitely talked about this in previous episodes, but, you know, Oliver is supposed to be smart and putting himself in smart positions and yes, fairly protective of his family and his team. And he just put his family and his team in a horrible position through this. And, you know, he's not 17. He knows better. He knew she was a reporter. He knew that she was investigating him, you know, and, you know, and I'm not saying this to entirely blame Oliver, but if you think about just basic journalist integrity, she certainly violated it. To get very specific, she acquired information identifying marks on his body by sleeping with him, and then came and approached him in the mayor's office with that information, asking for more information while romantically involved. She's, you know, it's because of that that I definitely think that Thea made the right choice. Mm-hmm. Because Susan has not shown journalistic integrity. And I mean, you know me, historically on this show, I will defend women who are attacking men. I don't mind. But in the case of Susan versus Oliver, you know, I don't want to sit here and defend Oliver, but, you know, I'm kind of forced to sit here and defend Oliver. You know, she slept with him and got information from it and then was using that against him and then was mad about it and continued to meet with people behind his back to continue the investigation, even though she said she was going to supposedly suspend the investigation while they were dating, which shame on Oliver for doing in the first place, because he should have known better. If he needs a girlfriend, Star City has plenty of girls. We've seen them at the various club scenes before. Like, it's fine. Find somebody else who's not putting your family at risk. And then, I guess, to not defend Oliver, seeing his reaction to what Thea did, like, really? You're gonna go that route, buddy? Like, well, yeah. You took Thea to the Lazarus pit to protect her. All she did was get an unethical journalist fired.
Well, and that's the thing. What do we make of Oliver and how upset he is with her? Because in the right? first instance of it, he's quite upset with her. But then later on in the episode, when he comes to visit her in the office, it seems to be okay again. And that's when he brings up, you know, you reminded me a lot of Mom. And
I don't know. That felt like playing dirty to me. Did that feel like playing dirty to you?
Well, I don't know, because he kind of said it with a smile, and he kind of, you know, it was like he liked that she reminded him of their mom. But then he also said, I'm very worried about my baby sister now, because right. he doesn't want her taking the same paths that Myra took. So I think we're going to see some development there, because I don't know if Thea was quite happy with being told she was acting like Myra.
Right.
It didn't look like
she was happy. Thea's had a sort of contentious history with a lot of Moira's choices. For a while, she wasn't speaking with her, and they reunited, and then her mother was killed right in front of her. You know,
hiding that Malcolm, that who her father is. Yeah, Malcolm Merlyn.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah. So maybe Thea is pretty upset to find out that, oh my God, am I acting like mom? I don't want to do that.
Right. Maybe. I don't know. It seems like such it's a heavy identity question to bring up for Thea in that moment, mm-hmm. because, you know, Oliver hid who her father was from her for a while. And that, you know, there's all this, you know, background to that story. And then the Lazarus pit, which altered her mind. And mm-hmm. Oliver's made a lot of choices, not bad choices, but choices that were morally ambiguous in order to protect his family, in order to protect his mother and sister specifically, and specifically Thea. Mm-hmm. And it makes perfect sense to me to see Thea make a slightly morally ambiguous choice to protect Oliver. And in this case, it's not a slightly morally ambiguous choice of getting a bunch of people killed or risking a bunch of people's lives or sort of like making a deal with the devil, Lazarus Pit style. She got an already unethical journalist discredited.
Yeah.
It wasn't that deep to me. So it was interesting to me to see how people responded to it based on that.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, she's just protecting her family at all costs,
right?
Which is very Moira-like, and Oliver's done the same thing for her. So I agree with right. you. It totally makes sense that she would do that. And I'm hoping that Oliver will maybe come around to realize that as well. And I mean, we don't want to see Oliver and Thea at odds with each other. We right. love them
I'm,
together.
I'm hoping you're right that he actually was playing Susan and that he was just annoyed that his long con plan kind of got foiled.
Yeah.
Because I think that would really help with his characterization if he's shown to at least be aware of what Susan's, you know, potential danger posed and that he was trying some sort of double play strategy to pacify her. That would help in keeping him in some level of esteem, I think.
Right. Yeah, I think so. Well, I guess we'll find out if that goes anywhere. I'm seeing as how the episode kind of ended on all of that stuff. I'm guessing mm-hmm. we'll it's going to be going on for quite a bit until we get some resolution for sure. So how about the flashbacks?
Yeah.
What did you think about them this time? I mean, it was kind of fun scenes.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
They felt short to me this week. Did they feel short to you?
You said that, and I don't know. It felt kind of normal to me. There was a lot going on in this episode, so I don't know. It felt kind of normal to me. A lot actually
maybe it was
kind of happened.
The absence of Talia.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it was... where was Talia this scene? But I guess Oliver was visiting Anatoly in the hospital, so what does she need to be? She doesn't need to be in these scenes, but... it didn't reveal a lot of big story elements running like that, but just like I stated in my opening monologue, I guess you could say, they're just continuing the story of his time in Russia, and I thought it was enjoyable. Like Anatoly was pretty funny, actually, when he's talking about his bare butts showing in the bed there or something like that. And that scene when Oliver took out the group with all the guns on his own, that was pretty cool. It just shows that he's gaining skill and learning, and he can handle a group of guys on his own. So I thought that was a really cool scene.
Yeah. You mentioned, you know, seeing his skills develop and him fighting on his own. What are you hoping to see from the flashbacks, sort of in the upcoming episodes leading up to the finale when he's going to be season one Oliver?
Well, it's funny you brought that up because I hadn't thought about it a lot in the terms of where they're going with it. But I think obviously there's going to be a big final confrontation between him and the Broadfell leader. I mean, what they introduced Dolph Lundgren as a major character. So where is he? Is he coming? We're going to see him again, I'm hoping.
Right.
You know, I really want to see Dolph in there. I absolutely love the scenes that he was in with them. So that I think is what's coming. Now, how they're going to tie it into where Oliver gets, you know, returns home and stuff. I hope that would be a nice ending, whether the story is a tragic one or it's a happy one, I don't know. But I think to totally bring it full circle, seeing him actually come back to Star City and start those first few moments that we saw in season one, that would be cool for me.
Yeah, I think it'll be cool. It'll, you know, it's something we've waited 5 years for, and I think it'll make the flashbacks more meaningful or interesting leading up to the finale. I've already been more interested in the flashbacks this season than I have been in previous seasons because they are in Russia, and it's kind of cool, and I've liked the background cast, and I've liked the way they've handled the plot so far this season, but I think that that will hopefully kind of get even better and more tied to the story as we find out, you know, more about how Prometheus is tied to season one Oliver's journey, and then mm-hmm. flashbacks tied to season one Oliver's journey, and hopefully show him in a place now in season five where where he's grown. Fingers crossed we see that convincingly portrayed.
Right.
Yesterday's episode left me kind of wondering, but I'm hopeful there'll be some character growth for him that actually sticks and is consistent and is reflective of a hero in their 30s.
Well, do you think we're going to see a big falling out between him and Anatoly?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it'll be pretty cool, though.
I think so. I mean, something I think has to happen. Something has to break there, and it might have to do with when Oliver wants to leave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because of the whole rules and rules of the Bratva and all, and the Brotherhood, all that stuff. So there, I think it's probably going to relate to that somehow.
Yeah, and yeah. He'll be left alone and as a lone wolf to return to the island and, you know, avenge all this stuff, and it'll be very dramatic. One of the things we mentioned a second ago, how Prometheus is tied to season one, and then one of the things you mentioned a few minutes before that was how we haven't seen Prometheus or really learned much about Prometheus other than Prometheus's mother in this episode. We saw that in the opening. What did you think of that?
Well, I thought it was a pretty good scene. It actually was pretty intense, which kind of surprised me, because for the short single scene that it was, the actress playing Prometheus' supposed mother, she held her own against Oliver in that scene. I mean, her acting was phenomenal, and
mm-hmm.
I think there's something more to it, because she's obviously messed up from something that we haven't seen yet, because for her to defend her son like that, who possibly could be Prometheus, she obviously knows something's going on, and maybe her son isn't even Prometheus. I mean, we all believe that it's not him anyway.
Right.
And so she obviously knows that he's into something else. I mean, we've seen this play out in various movies and stuff before, where the son is some crazy serial killer or something, and the mom is in total defense. Oh, he's such a good boy. You know, don't right. hurt him. And that's what I'm seeing with her here. So there's whoever we find out her son is, or whoever we find out Prometheus is, I think there's more to this story about her son. I don't know. I can't see that being just a one-off shot like that. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with one of the things you mentioned. Well, most everything you mentioned, but in particular, you were talking about how her performance was really strong. The actress's performance was really strong, who played his mother, and that it was interesting to see Oliver go up against her. And I think with Oliver, or you know, with Amel in general, a lot of the emotional impact tends to center around who his scene partner is. And mm-hmm. Prometheus's mother made a really good scene partner for him. And that was one of the things that made me miss Moira and miss sort of having not only just young people on the show. Yeah. We don't get to see a lot of like parental figures, and even though this is a parental figure of a serial killer who's out to destroy Team Arrow and or Oliver or the Green Arrow or whatever, there was something about that dynamic was interesting to me and reminiscent of scenes we've seen Oliver have with Moira and who was it in like the second half of season four? I don't know. Other people that he's faced off against who mm-hmm. were not just people his age, but when he's had to face off against older or parental figures, it's always been really interesting to me. So I thought that was cool. It's the closest we've gotten to actually understand anything about the character and personality of Prometheus, not just the goal of Prometheus, not just that he's vaguely tied to the season one villain, but one of the season one villains, but actually learn something about his, I don't know, personality, characteristics. Why do we care about what he thinks of Oliver rather than just that he's attacking Oliver?
Right, right. I really like that point. You're actually just hit on something that I hadn't even thought about in realizing that that could be where we're missing a lot of, I don't want to say dramatic performances, but there is that element of having adult, parental, older actors on this show other than Lance. I mean, Lance is really the only one. But right. Somebody like Moira, and yeah, you really hit a strong point there that we are lacking that and yeah. Giving...
They kill them all off.
Yeah, but like you said, just to give the actors, our young actors, scenes mm-hmm. to be able to play off of these more experienced veteran actors, that makes a really big difference. Now that you've brought that up, I'm thinking, holy cow, that is bang on. That's something we're missing. So, yeah. Very interesting. So
it was something that I think was mm-hmm. so characteristic of Arrow in season one and season two. And I don't want to be that person who's like, season one and season two were perfect, because they certainly weren't. They just, you know, we remember the high points, and I get that.
Yeah.
But I think in earlier seasons, there was just like a larger age range, which allowed for a more family dynamic where we got to see, you know, young teen Thea and like late 20s Oliver, and then older parental figures who he had to go up against, and city leaders he had to go up against, and these corrupt businessmen. And there was often this like, you really got the feel of the whole city involved, because it wasn't just a whole set of people all around the same age. I don't know. It's something I'm hoping we get to see a little more of in the latter half of the season. It's one of the reasons why I often comment that, like, it was really nice to see Lance return, or I'd like to see Mama Smoke return, or, you know, I like Thea behaving like Moira. Those are elements that I think are so characteristic of this show that are necessary, because in this show, it's not just about, you know, I would like to see this superpower return, or this meta monster do such and such to the city. It does get to be more of a character issue, and wanting this character to interact with that character. And that's kind of how Arrow operates. So it was a cool right. scene for me.
Yeah.
Left me wanting more about Prometheus. Like you said, that's a villain who should hopefully return someday.
Hopefully, yeah. I mean, we all heard the hype before the season. There's one big bad villain, and it's going to be a real slow burn, a slow release as to who he is and what's going on. And they didn't really express how slow it was going to be.
mm-hmm.
But, you know, anyway, let's talk about that scene with Lance and Dinah again.
Yeah.
Because just another
interesting stuff for Dinah this episode.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that scene when she comes in, and we already talked a little bit about it, but the music that they played when he was giving her his approval, there was just this amazing, touching music that kind of slowly rolled in the background, and it really highlighted the emotion that was feeling. And I think that's something that Arrow and Legends, and even Flash sometimes, they do really well. They have the right music in place that helps drive the emotion. And I mean, a lot of people might not even notice it, but that's something that I always pick up on. And I can't even describe the music. It just really highlighted the emotion that was there, and I liked it.
Yeah, they've done pretty good about having sort of consistent themes for different characters.
Right.
So I think I could be wrong on this, but if I'm remembering correctly, the theme that they were using there was one they've used for Lance family scenes before. So that might have been sort of the nostalgic aspect of it.
Right.
No, it was interesting. I saw sort of mixed thoughts on that, like, oh, you know, that's great advice from Lance. Laurel wanted somebody to carry on in her place, or, you know, both of his daughters, I guess, for that matter, are reflective in the legacy that Dinah carries on. And then some were wondering why he wasn't a little bit more, you know, concerned about it. But for me, because I was not super tied to either of the past two Canaries, I have no problem with Dinah picking up the literal baton in this case. I wasn't necessarily feeling that we needed a third canary, but this is the best one so far. And it was cool to see her interact with Lance and kind of talk a little bit about this name that she'll be carrying on.
Yep, definitely. So what about Wild Dog and Curtis? Because I actually really enjoyed their scenes this episode.
Did you?
Yeah.
That's good.
They looked more like field partners this time. It's like they put the bickering behind them and they're okay. They're going to be out there. It really is the two of them that are left now, you know, out of the newbies. So they're kind of working together. It was just fun. I mean, Curtis had his new suit, which I thought was wicked. It looked cool, the leather. And I really liked how they highlighted that he's starting to acknowledge his limits and stuff. So he was getting a little smarter about being in the field. You know, his suit's got Kevlar now because he knows he gets shot or hit a lot or whatever. And, you know, that little snide remark he made about, you know, if I had done that, I would have sprained my wrist. He's acknowledging his limits. And I like this progress with Curtis. This was just a great, they wrote him really well this time. And I don't know. What'd you think?
You know, I've kind of felt that their scenes for the past couple episodes have felt a bit the same. It seems like every single episode there's the Curtis and Wild Dog being bros moment. It's not something I actively dislike, but I think I'm just kind of curious to see a little bit more about them. Maybe working with other characters as well. I don't know. I feel like they're really just trying so hard to establish this, like, buddy hero duo for whatever reason, probably an investment in season 6, and I understand that, but for me I'm kind of just like okay, they're all right. When is Mr. Terrific gonna have some new tech, or you know, when is Wild Dog gonna do something? I don't know, it's all right. I think they're just like really investing a lot of like consistent time each week in like reminding us that this is a developing bromance. And I'm like, got it. Cool.
All right. I don't know. I just think it's cool. As I pointed out, they're the last two, and they're kind of,
right,
you know, they get thrown in the field to deal with the things that maybe is a little lower level than what Oliver would and Diggle would take on. So,
right,
you know, it's like they're gaining experience together and stuff. So I didn't mind this episode. It showed a nicer development of that. It didn't feel as forced to me. Like, I agree with you about previous episodes, but this one I felt they had the right moments, the right chemistry and the right feel to the scenes they were in. So I was totally okay with it.
Well, you mentioned Diggle. What did you think of Diggle this episode?
Again, he didn't have a lot, but
yeah,
that scene with him and Dinah was fantastic. It's Diggle giving his Diggle wisdom, making her feel supported and welcome to the
team.
And
you still see it as friends, right?
I still see it as friends. He's just
all right. I'm probably gonna ask you that every week.
Okay. Well, unless I see them kiss, I'm not buying into it, because I don't see it. I don't feel it in the scenes together. He's just being Diggle, just welcoming her into the team.
For right now, anyways, like she's still new. I'm not rooting for a romance for her. I'm not rooting for a romance between them just to start with. I want to be clear on that. I just want to predict it if it does happen. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's not even like I want it to happen. I just want to be right.
Too funny.
Thank you. I try. With Diggle, though, I mean, he still has a lot of storyline, I think, to get through with his family. And there's definitely, you know, questions with Lila and Hive, and you know, are they still alive, and you know, where's his kid and all that. So I'm interested to see more of that for him, but I'm also I see them with the Diggle and Dinah scenes each episode now, and the shoulder touches and the glances. I'm gonna be right about this one.
All right, well, I'm gonna oppose you just because.
Okay, we need opposite sides. So there we go. We've got that established.
Definitely. So there's a scene I want to kind of touch on, like with the whole idea of Dinah going back to the police. You know what I was thinking about that? Is that it's kind of filling the hole left by Lance, because he's no longer part of the police department. He's now working in the mayor's office. So
right.
The team doesn't have somebody on the inside of the police to help feed them information and see what's going on you know, from the city perspective. So I think Dinah becoming a police officer and becoming that gives them that inside information again. And I like it. That's, I think it's a great, you know, because we used to get, how many scenes did we used to get at the police station with Lance? We haven't had any in how long?
Yeah, we used to get a couple per episode.
Yeah. So I think it just bringing us back to that is kind of touching on some of the original feels of things that we've been missing and lacking from the show. So I like it. I just like that kind of loop coming around.
She sort of like replaced the entire season two Lance family. You think about it. I don't mean for that to sound callous.
Right.
Obviously they're all still, you know, great and alive and well.
Okay, I want to ask you two things here.
Yeah.
Okay, first, Adrian, how is he not suspicious of Oliver being Arrow by now?
Well, maybe he's Prometheus.
Do you think? I mean, I know that theory is out there, but
that's
man,
a,
oh man,
it's a running theory. And frankly, so many other theories have been shot down. I sort of have to run with that as one of our top contenders.
Could be, but he seems so, so supportive of Oliver. He is right there protecting him and making sure everything's running
That's
smoothly.
Just what
like,
Prometheus would do.
Yeah. Well, okay. I guess. Because it, I mean, maybe because I'm sitting here wondering how he doesn't have any suspicion at all. Maybe that's why.
Maybe he does have suspicions, but he's scared because Oliver's the mayor. Maybe he's Prometheus. Maybe it's TV magic of he's just sort of like, somebody has to not know and somebody has to be clueless. So it may as well be the guy named Adrian.
Well, do you like Adrian? I like him as a character. I think he's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think he's all right. He's, again, I don't mean for this to sound callous, but he strikes me as a character who's going to die, but like he's all right. I don't dislike him.
Right.
It's just, I feel like he's going to die.
Okay. Well, I mean, yeah, he's expendable, I guess, as characters go on the show. But for me, what makes me like him is loyalty is a huge, huge thing for me. I love loyalty amongst friends and partners and whatever. So the fact that he's showing such vigilant loyalty to Oliver just is what makes me really like this guy. So I don't know. I hope for good things from him. I don't want to. Although it'd be cool. I mean, it'd be cool that if he's been the inside mole this whole time and, you know,
kind of fits the general build that Prometheus should be. No,
yeah, I should say Lieutenant Pike. Early on in the episode, Pike was questioning Oliver quite a bit, and Oliver was defending Arrow. How does he not suspect Oliver? Like, what's going on here, man? And then later in the scene,
pretty suspicious, actually.
He did kind of, but it. I didn't sense it being suspicious that Oliver is Arrow. It's just that Oliver knows who Arrow is, I guess. But then to get to my question to you at the end there, after he comes in and rest, do you think he figured it out? Do you think he is like, okay, Oliver is the Arrow and that's why I'm going to, you know, I will believe him and I'm going to come in and help him out and he let him go.
Maybe. You never really, you know how just like when we're trying to figure out who Prometheus is, often we can't decide if a character is Prometheus or if a character might know who Prometheus is and is working with them. I sort of think that that's sort of the reverse perspective that the police officers on this show often have. They may suspect that the mayor, of course, has spoken with the Green Arrow, or the mayor knows who the Green Arrow is, or is enabling or protecting the Green Arrow, but they may not yet at this point think he actually is literally the Green Arrow.
Okay. I just want to know what you thought about that.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of assume, unless it's specifically shown that they're like questioning it and asking it, I kind of assume that they have an air of superhero style ignorance of not knowing, you know?
Okay.
That the glasses protect Clark Kent's identity, that sort of dynamic.
Yes, that sort of thing. Okay, cool. I mean, it wouldn't be unlike, I guess I'm comparing it to, say, the Commissioner knowing Batman, but he doesn't know who Batman is, right? So maybe, I guess I'm just looking at it also, Pike and Oliver are standing there face to face quite a bit. And then in the park at the end there, all those spotlights are clearly on Arrow's face. It's pretty easy right. to see it's Oliver Queen standing there. So, you know, that those kind of things. And you just, yeah, it's Clark Kent in the glasses kind of effect. So, yeah, who knows?
Yeah, just kind of have to suspend disbelief there. I mean, it's possible he may suspect, but if he doesn't, it's just the Clark Kent's glasses
yeah.
dynamic.
Yeah. All right, let's get into some transmissions, shall we?
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. All right, what do we got this week?
Well, we got a couple emails from our listeners. We had a couple cool sort of summaries and feedback posted on the Arrow Facebook page. And I think we also have some voicemails for this week, right?
We got one, I believe. Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Let's start with Christy's email. She had a really positive review, and I thought that was pretty fun. She says, to start off, she really loved the episode, and she said Arrow really surprised her with how they handled Susan. She goes on to say, I expected Oliver to turn on the news and see a news story from her outing himself as the Green Arrow. Instead, she actually confronted him. Now I'm wondering if she somehow found out about the Billy cover-up, or if Prometheus leaked that info to the news, which was something I was wondering about as well. And I'm still sort of wondering how deep this goes for Susan. Is she working with Prometheus?
Yeah.
Christy goes on to say, I thought the conversation between Oliver and Captain Pike was really mature. He was able to tell the truth about what happened with Billy without outing himself. And I think being mayor has actually enhanced his efforts as the Green Arrow, since he can advocate for himself from a position of power, which is interesting because I saw pros and cons on that perspective going back and forth of, you know, it's great that Oliver as the mayor can protect the Green Arrow, but is it an abuse of power for Oliver as the Green Arrow to protect, or for Oliver as the mayor to protect Green Arrow? What do you think?
Yeah, what do I think about that? I don't know if he's abusing his power per se, because I mean, he originally got into the whole role because it allows him to protect the city from two different aspects, right? So,
right.
I don't know.
So long as he means well and protects the city, it's not something I think we would often question. But you know, I feel like we've also talked about before on the show, maybe a while back. You know, absolute power breeds absolute corruption. So, you know. It's an interesting thing to consider.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Christy goes on to say, I didn't understand why Lance, even out in the field, isn't he the deputy mayor? I really enjoyed that brief scene between Lance and Dinah, acknowledging Laurel's legacy. It felt like a nice message to fans that were maybe worried about Dinah replacing Laurel. She also goes on to say, as we said, I felt that the three villains were a bit underutilized. They existed mainly to provide a launching point for the Green Arrow and the ACU to interact. If you're going to bring back China White, who's been such a great foil for Oliver in the past, and Cupid, they could have done something more with them. So I just thought there were a lot of great thoughts in there from Christy.
Yeah, no, she's right in tune with us. I definitely agree with everything she said there. And I really liked, I said it as you were speaking there, I really liked how she worded the about the scene with Lance and Dinah, that it's a nice message to fans. So I totally agree with you, Christy. That was a nice way to put it. Cool. All right. Next, we had an email from I'm Just Here for Felicity. And what did they have to say?
I'm Just Here for Felicity writes in, and she says, I like how Oliver used the aren't you joking line to try and throw Susan off, even if it doesn't work. She also mentions, can Dinah please be in her police uniform more? Officer smoking. It was sweet to see Quentin okay the mantle name for Dinah. It's great to see Cupid comment on the arrows being expensive, because it definitely played to the realism of equipment costing, even if you are the bad guy. And, you know, also Cupid uses arrows too, which is kind of cool.
Good point.
A great scene of Susan calling Oliver out about what she knows. I have to say the trio of villains was fun this episode. She quotes, what kind of person intentionally blows up somebody else's world? Prometheus could ask you the same thing, Oliver. She also goes on to comment, there was a good scene between the siblings. If Susan is innocent in everything, I definitely feel for her, which I think is an interesting comment. And I think that's sort of stemming where that whole discussion comes from in the first place. That was something I think I was kind of sensitive to in this episode is, you know, as much as I would maybe on some levels want to consider Susan innocent, I can't really consider her innocent, but that would change things if she is portrayed that way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just here for Felicity goes on to comment that some of Wild Dog's lines were pretty cool, and she loved also some of Dinah's lines about not wearing the full black canary suit yet. Shows a real aspect of her and is something that makes me like her more, she says. I'd be okay if she made a few changes to the suit. While she wants to respect Laurel, she's not her, and she should get to, you know, dress like an individual and sort of choose her own costume a bit. All the bullets flying around, and no one even got clipped during the action scene. She calls that a bit unrealistic. More cheering on for uniform Dinah, and she also says, it may just be me, but I'm not that upset about Oliver possibly losing the mayor position, as we have Thea as a candidate. And she says, a great episode, but with the title, she thought we might see Sin back, which is a good point.
Oh,
it's another great female hero we could bring back to this show.
Yeah, she actually brought up some good points there. I guess I kind of laugh at the scene with all the bullets flying around. It seemed everybody went behind cover pretty fast, so I don't know what they were even shooting at other than concrete barricades and stuff. Yeah, just the bit about her, Dinah, not wanting to wear Laurel's suit, I really don't want her to anyway. I hope she gets her own style of suit. I mean, hey, why not? Let's get the Black Canary from the comic books with the fishnet stockings. How about that?
No, Martin. No.
it wouldn't quite suit the show. That was just a little bit of Overlord in me coming out there.
Well, I'm with you. I'm perfectly willing to sit here and thirst over hot lady heroes. However, I think one of the things that I actually like about this incarnation of the canary is her style. And I think it's really cool. And it's very much, you know, with the previous costumes, we've seen like a leather bustier and like a lace long sleeve thing underneath like a black buckled vest. I have not been a fan of the previous costumes. They've put them on, you know, some lovely ladies, but the previous costumes themselves could use some work. And I think Dinah's like cool black pants with the like belt and chains and like the t-shirt thing with the black leather jacket. I don't know. It's cool. It suits the show. And I know she'll probably get a little bit more superhero suity, but I'm hoping it doesn't involve like lace and tights and fishnets.
Yeah, I was.
If
really
they
just
did
kidding.
Want to nod to that, they could do like a nice, cool, like undercover scene. You know how they've had like the casino scenes and stuff like that in the past.
Mm-hmm.
They could do a cool undercover scene where somebody gets to wear fishnets, not to be, you know, pushing my Felicity Smoke agenda, but we have seen a really lovely photo shoot of Emily Bett Ricards in black fishnets. So that could be a cool nod.
Oh, there you go. I did not see that. I think.
Oh, I can share those with you if you're ever interested.
I think there's a lot of Felicity people out there that would like to see that. Felicity fans, yeah. I should say. No, I think she should get. I mean, running around in jeans and a jacket isn't quite a costume. I think they will eventually develop something for her, something that suits her a little bit more, and I'm sure she'll have some type of say in it, because she didn't really seem like the costume wearing type by the way she reacted to getting the mask, so we'll see. But yeah, no, good points in there though, for sure. Thanks for sending that in. We've got one voicemail here from our green butterfly. Here she is.
Hi, this is your Eye in the Sky Green Butterfly. I'm off on special assignment this week, so I didn't get to watch the episode, but I wanted to fly by and tell you all, Happy Superhero Friday! Hope the episode was awesome. See you next week. Green Butterfly out.
Well, isn't she sweet?
Yes. Thanks for flying by.
Thanks for flying by there, Justina. Yeah, well, hopefully you'll watch it and tell us what you think, because I'm always curious what you thought about the episode.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I think that's pretty much it there, Chameleon.
It sure is. We flashed right through. The time flew by.
So, anything you want to close out with? I mean, this episode, coming off of the big gun politics one, how are you feeling right now? Where you think the rest of the season is going?
Well, I thought this episode got back to being fun, which was cool. And, you know, I've got my fingers crossed that, you know, maybe they'll pull through for Oliver's characterization and really show him to be making some adult hero choices. You know, we live in hope. Next episode's called Fighting Fire with Fire. So I'm kind of excited about that.
Okay, see, I don't usually even look forward at the synopsis for each episode, so I don't know what that could mean, but it sounds exciting.
I've seen the synopsis, but I won't spoil it for you.
Okay. Well, for me, I want to reiterate that I think Arrow has found its way back to good storytelling. Like I said in the beginning, I feel like we're living in the world of Arrow now, and Star City so much more this season, which comes from being halfway through 5 seasons. So it's nice. I'm glad we got a 6th season coming to, you know, continue this journey.
Yeah,
so yeah, it's
gonna be fun.
Yeah,
there's lots of things we can put on our wish list for the rest of this season and for season 6. Like more lady villains.
More lady villains. I'm sure they're coming. They're out there somewhere.
Yep.
All right, Cammie, well, where can people get a hold of you if they want to personally contact you?
You can find me on Twitter at Cammie and Ray, and pretty much every other social media site, I'm at Cammie and Ray. I've got some Smile Time broadcasts that are live streamed to Arrow, where I live react to Arrow, or live stream to Facebook, where I live react to Arrow and a couple other TV shows, and I was also on a review this week with Slander Entertainment talking about this week's episode. So you can find me pretty much anywhere. Come chat. Come talk about superheroes with me. Come talk about supervillains with me. What about you, Martin?
Sounds good. Well, you can Twitter me, tweet me, whatever. See, that's how very little I use Twitter, but I'm at CyberTiger17. Where I would really love to hear from the squad, though, is if any of you also watch Legends of Tomorrow, and you haven't found me yet on my first show, which is called Tomorrow's Legends. I am over there with my other villainous partner, Jess,
dun, dun, dun.
AKA Harley Quinn. So come find us on Facebook under Tomorrow's Legends. Just ask to join. I'll for sure approve you, and let's talk Legends of Tomorrow, because that's my other show, and I'd love to get some more squad members over there and joining our family there, too. You can find us in iTunes and Google Play under Tomorrow's Legends. So, yeah, definitely.
Awesome.
And I also wanted to say I hope our audio quality is better this week. I know it was a little bit off last week. We just had some volume issues I could not fix in post-processing because it happened during the recording, and that's once that happens, it's really tough to fix. So hopefully we've got a little bit better handle on this week, guys. Just wanted to
say, and it's gonna get even better because I've got some fun audio toys headed my way for me to play with. It's gonna help me take over the world even faster.
Oh no, we're in trouble.
All uphill from here.
All right, Cammie. Well, this was fun. You have a good weekend. We'll talk to you next week. And Arrow Squad, we'll also talk to you next week. This is The Flash signing off.
And I'm the Chameleon. Goodbye.
Arrow Squad is presented by Golden Spiral Media at goldenspiralmedia.com.